Last month, I talked about trust and faith, and part of that discussion was trust and faith in divine law. And as the result of that, we received several questions about divine law. What is divine law, and how do I understand divine law? And Reverend Curley and I discussed this and decided to both present aspects of answering that question. So I'm going to take off and continue on the discussion of what is divine law. So I want to explore divine law and what it means to us in our regular daily life. I'd like to put it in context, and I came up with three laws that I think all of us come in contact with. One, human laws that govern our daily life and social interactions with others. Two, natural laws. And last, divine laws. We'll start with human laws. Concerning human laws, we see different human responses to the concept of law or rule. One, we have those who are rule followers to the nth degree. Two, we have those that see a rule and rebelliously do the opposite every time. Three, we have those who try to follow the rules the best they can, but perhaps perceive a speed limit as more of a suggestion than a law. Concerning natural laws, these are the laws of physics, chemistry, engineering, and those other aspects that govern our physical life. We throw a rock in the air, and the law of gravity brings it back to the ground. Newton's third law of motion says for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. If you do not fundamentally follow the architectural engineering laws of building a structure, it will collapse. Now, these are just some examples of natural laws that are part of God's creation of the physical universe. Arlene discussed the law of Hermes. I'll simply add or reinforce that the ancient Egyptians, as did other civilizations following them, taught that there has always existed a universal law of correspondence by which humans are bound. Hermes taught this in his second verse of the Emerald Tablets as, "That which is above is like to that which is below. And that which is below is like to that which is above." In other words, all things that exist in the spiritual world exist in the natural world and in a natural form. And all things that exist in the natural world also exist in the spiritual world in a spiritual form. As above, so below. As below, so above. As both a scientist and a theologian, Swedenborg called this concept correspondence and wrote of it extensively. Now, all religions recognize a transcendent law, truth, or principle which governs the universe and human affairs. We have the word or law of the Christianity, the Torah of Judaism, Dharma and order of Hinduism, Tao and principle of ancient Chinese religion, and we could go on. All of these and others have teachings depicting the truth, law, or principle which is at the heart of the cosmos. Regardless of the differences between various religions, their viewpoints share respect for the law. They all view the universe as fundamentally moral. An expression of the workings of a divine principle or natural law in both the realm of nature and human affairs. They recognize that morality and ethics are as enduring as the law of physics. For example, the Quran, Surah 16:3, states it simply as, "God created the heaven and earth with truth." Divine laws, therefore, are those fundamental laws necessary for God to create order out of chaos. There is order in all of God's creation, and it is stated that order is heaven's first law. For such order to exist, there must be a balancing law in all facets of the universe. Divine laws are spiritual in their nature and incentive. Four, they deal with our spiritual being, our eternal real self, the divine principle or soul spark within us. The underlying principle of divine law is the law of exact balance, or the law of equal exchange, or as we heard earlier, the law of cause and effect. It's all the same. This law is simple, it is all-encompassing, but infinitely complex in its execution. It leaves nothing to chance. This is expressed in Matthew chapter 10, verse 30, this way: "But so as far as you are concerned, even the hairs of your head are all numbered." Simply put, it punishes or rewards, or more accurately stated, reacts in direct proportion to the original action. Now, the Old Testament language is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The Nazarene in Matthew chapter 7, verse 2 stated it differently. He said, "For with the same judgment that you judge, you will be judged, and with the same measure in which you measure, it will be measured unto you." Paul stated it positively in Corinthians when he said, "We reap what we sow." He added in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6, "But remember this one, one who sows sparingly shall reap sparingly. One who sows generously shall also reap generously." And the common secular phrases that express this would be, "What goes around comes around," and "You sleep in the bed you make," and "Everything happens for a reason." Throughout the ages, different spiritual teachers have expressed this law in many ways, but the final meaning is the same. And we can say it this way, that we are all reimbursed, be it for good or not so good, for our every thought, desire, and action. This reimbursement will usually, but not always, be in kind. So I want to go back to the letter of the law, the Old Testament concept. Moses taught his Hebrew people many laws, including the Ten Commandments and the eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth concept. We call Mosaic law and other teachings like this the letter of the law. Moses had to focus more on laws and rules surrounding specific human behavior because the people were not listening to the more spiritual teachings. At a lower stage of human spiritual evolution, Moses' approach had its place. However, as humanity has slowly evolved spiritually and advanced, we find that it costs more to revenge injuries than to bear them. The letter of the law can easily be summed as, "Do no harm to yourself or others." However, the letter of law has its place, but it is the beginning and not the end. The Nazarene comes later and takes the letter of the law to the next higher step. He teaches the spirit of the law. In Matthew 5, 17 through 20, I share, "Do not expect that I have come to weaken the law or the prophets. I have not come to weaken, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not even one jot or tittle," and I'll digress, a jot is a yod, and the yod is the smallest character of the Hebrew alphabet, and a tittle is a real tiny particle. So not even the smallest letter of the Hebrew alphabet or the tiniest particle shall pass away from the law until all of it is fulfilled. "Whoever therefore tries to weaken even one of these smallest commandments and teaches so, they shall be regarded as small in the kingdom of heaven. But anyone who observes and teaches them, they shall be regarded as great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you, that unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven." Later on in Matthew, chapter 22, verses 34 through 40, we find the key to truly understanding the spirit of divine law. "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees," Jesus, "they gathered together. And one of them who knew the law asked him this, testing him, 'Teacher, what is the greatest commandment of the law?'" The Pharisees thought they had Jesus now because there's hundreds of laws and how can one be greater than another? Jesus, who understood that living in the spirit of the law is like none before him, said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your power, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is, love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang the law and the prophets." Now, commenting on this passage from Matthew, Dr. Clymer stated this, that if we keep these two commandments or laws, we cannot do otherwise than harmonize our life with all of divine law. Evade or defy any one of them, and we are guilty of breaking them all. The Nazarene reinforces his expression on divine law in John chapter 13. He says, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this everyone shall know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." And lastly, he added the golden rule, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." The Nazarene not only taught us to follow the letter of the law, but more importantly, to do so in the spirit of the law, imbued with love, kindness, compassion, and forgiveness. So how do we harmonize our life with divine law? So to harmonize our life with divine law, we first have to understand it, and that's the purpose of today's discussions. The disciples had the same question, and we see this in the Gospel of Thomas, Logian 6. His disciples asked Jesus and said to him, "Do you want us to fast? How should we pray? Should we give to charity? What diet should we observe?" In other words, how do we follow all these laws? Okay, and there were lots of them. Jesus said, "Don't lie and don't do what you hate, because all things are disclosed before heaven. After all, there is nothing hidden that will not be revealed, and there is nothing covered that will remain undisclosed." So Jesus basically said, do good. We find in John chapter 7 the following, that the will of God is following divine law. Jesus answered, saying, "My teachings are not mine, but God who sent me," the divine law. "One who wills to do God's will can understand if my teachings is from God, or if I am just speaking of my own accord. If anyone will do God's will, that one shall know the doctrine or the law." Remember, the commandment of love governs all of our thoughts, desires, and actions. The more we imbue love into our life's actions, the more we harmonize with divine law. Now, sometimes life throws us a curveball, and we have two tough decisions to make. We could call that trying to choose the lesser of two evils. I like to call it choosing the lesser shade of gray. Now, as long as we choose the lesser shade of gray with the guiding principle of love and the golden rule, all will be well. The divine law functions through the reactionary effects of the feelings and intent of our heart. So to outwardly perform good deeds, while internally harboring selfish motives and ignoble purposes, does not meet the requirements of harmonizing our life with divine law. To robotically follow the letter of the law without the spirit of the law falls short of the mark. Good, kind, noble, and generous thoughts radiating from a pure, unselfish heart become a part of the atmosphere or aura surrounding us. These positive thoughts contribute to the mighty magnetic field of universal love. Thus, by increasing the atmospheric sea of love and goodwill, we add to the blessings of others, and at the same time, increase the store from which we ourselves may draw. We are limited in our drawing power of protection only as we limit ourselves. So in conclusion, because divine laws are the indispensable for God to create order out of chaos, they are immutable or unchangeable. Divine law can be simply summed as, for every action, there is an equal reaction. Divine law is both spiritual law governing the welfare of our soul, and the natural law as expressed by Newton's third law of motion. If we do good to ourselves and others, we reap good. If we do harm to ourselves or others, we reap harm. Because divine law is ingrained in God's creation, We, with our God-given free will, can try to evade the law, but we can never really break it. Love is the measuring stick by which we harmonize our life with God's divine law. It is doing things lovingly, anything and everything that we do. When we do so, we fulfill the law and come ever so much closer to partaking of the oneness with God.